This is Briar Klopp, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Greenbush, Minnesota. And we're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Randy Conan, along with Melissa Hammer. We'll also hear from Don Wick and Tyler Donaldson at the NAFB convention in Kansas City. Farm broadcaster Don Wick is in Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting's convention. Wick spoke with CoBank lead economist Jackie Facca about the energy and environmental policy with the incoming Trump administration.
Obviously, we're in transition to a new administration. It seems like these cabinet choices have been coming out fast and furious, and kind of in that whole mix, EPA came out. Tell us about the choice and what we know about them.
Yeah, so a little bit of surprise, right? We don't always get the EPA so soon after the elections. Representative Lee Zeldin from Long Island, New York area is the EPA nominee. Obviously, a lot of folks, you talk about the USDA Ag Secretary, but we know the EPA head is one of the most important roles when it comes to implementation of the RFS. We talk about how they look at small refinery exemptions. So as we look at the track record of Mr. Zeldin, former Representative Zeldin, while he was in Congress, he did introduce a bill. He was one of the lead sponsors of a bill to actually repeal the RFS and another one that would have limited corn's ability to be in the RFS. Now, this was very early on, and a lot of, if we think back of some of those concerns that some of the Congress members had about RFS and how we were going to meet those goals. So, you know, there's always opportunities to make sure we educate him about the current situation and where biofuels fits into the fuel supply and the role that it can play in offsetting oil. But, you know, I think he would be probably in that camp of maybe more of an oil supporter. But I think, you know, we know oil companies also are in the biofuel space too. So opportunity to educate him more on that as well. You know, we look back at the last Trump administration, small refinery exemptions, SREs, as we like to call them. You know, people, they're back, and they will be probably back on the decision plate for this new EPA. Under the Biden administration, there were no small refinery exemptions approved. During the Trump administration, we did have some. Which, what does that mean? That means a little bit less demand, maybe, for it. It weakens the renewable volume obligations underneath the RFS. So we will see how that shakes out and what we can expect for the biofuels industry as we go forward from here.
In the current administration, we're still waiting for guidance on some of the tax considerations as it relates to renewables. How do you see that shaking out?
You know, I'd love to say that they might be able to push it out before they get out of town, but there's a lot of things on their plate that they're trying to push out. I don't know how high 45Z is on that list. So unfortunately, I don't think it's going to come out. We might see some safe harbor guidance from the Biden administration before they leave, which would basically kind of give some of that, okay, this is where things are, use this until we get a final implementation, and then be able to pass that baton on to the Trump administration. So maybe we see some safe harbor guidance out to help provide a little more certainty. You know, right now we're seeing some biodiesel producers who aren't buying feedstocks because they don't know the rules of the game come 45 January 1. You know, I think with this new administration, they're going to want to put their own stamp on this too. Obviously a big domestic agenda from the Trump administration. This 45Z, it's called the Clean Fuel Production Tax. It's supposed to incentivize domestic feedstocks, fuels. So how they write that may be really beneficial for our feedstocks here, soy oil, being able to maybe put a tariff on used cooking oil that's coming in that could be used and be able to qualify for that tax credit that wouldn't be able to. So things we're going to be watching as we head into the new year.
From Trade Talk, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
Bismarck National Weather Service meteorologist Jason Angling says the system rolling in next week is sure to bring cooler temperatures behind it.
There's still a couple solutions that we're kind of monitoring for that next week. So the overall basic is we got kind of this big low-pressure system. It even digs a little further south, it looks like. So it's not a classic Colorado low, but it's kind of in that area. And so that kind of ejects out of the mountains. And so where does it go next? You know, it's going to be the big question. Does it kind of track more in Minnesota and bring some rain and snow to North Dakota, or does it go further east and maybe still clips eastern North Dakota but not so much in central and western North Dakota? So that's something we have to just kind of keep an eye on. Just know that there's a chance for rain and snow kind of in that Tuesday time period.
The precipitation could help some ground conditions for some of North Dakota.
Yeah, so the highest probability for just the liquid amount of that, probably still favors central and eastern North Dakota as far as just getting the precipitation amount of it, and not as much in western North Dakota, which is where we do kind of still have some of that drought lingering. So the relief might be slow to come with this system unless you're kind of in the central and eastern portions. We'll get a little bit, but, you know, not a heavy amount. But, yeah, the central and eastern parts of the state would be the more favored areas right now.
Advanced Trading commodity research analyst Brian Bastick said traders are taking profit after Thursday's sharp sell-off.
As the week ends here, of course, we're moving more and more towards South American weather. And right now, the South American weather looks pretty good for Brazil, maybe not quite as ideal for Argentina. It's so early in the growing season, though. But in a nutshell, I think, yeah, a little bit of profit taking here, some short covering here on Friday before the weekend. I think what we're watching is export sales business, too. We've really had some stout export sales, particularly for corn, the last few weeks here. Today's number may be a bit lower than what the trade was expecting, but still a strong, strong number. Beans is a strong number today, too.
The grains are seeing a short covering bounce ahead of the weekend. Martinson Ag Risk Management President Randy Martinson says the grains continue to face multiple headwinds.
We've got a dollar that's going sharply higher. I think that's putting pressure on the grains. You know, we haven't seen as robust exports this week. I think that's putting a little pressure on. They've been good, but they haven't been stellar like last week. I think the market is a little concerned about the administration and some of the rumors they're hearing about tariffs and the possibility of the EPA director that's being vetted for the job. It doesn't like biofuels. I think all that's coming in and puts pressure on. And we're also seeing a palm oil market that traded sharply higher, you know, on the last couple of weeks.
This is the Red River Farm Network.
Friday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. At NAFB's annual convention in Kansas City, USDA Foreign Ag Services Administrator Daniel Whitley shared an overview of the U.S. Ag on global markets with Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Tyler Donaldson.
To start, can you just talk to me about what it is that you guys at the Foreign Ag Service do here for American Ag?
I like to think of the Foreign Agricultural Service as being the representative of all of American agriculture around the world. We have offices in over 100 countries. We have 150 attachés that work in those offices, and they're our eyes, our ears, and our voices, and they help open up markets and create new sales and new exports for American agriculture.
Share with us a little bit, or talk to me a little bit about, just give an overview here heading into 2025.
Yeah, I think American agriculture is in great shape. I think we're doing really well. We've hit records three out of the last 4 years in terms of exports. This year won't be a record, but it'll be right there, number two or number three. I think that we've got some new innovative programs to support American agriculture, promote their products around the world, market their products around the world, come up with new markets. Traditionally, we've been reliant on a lot of good, dependable markets, but it's always healthy from a business perspective and an economic perspective to have your eye out on new opportunities and new markets. So we've got programs that have been able to do that.
Okay, great. And speaking of those programs, any you'd like to highlight here?
Yeah, I think the one big one is the RAP program, Regional Ag Promotion Program, and it's really designed to help encourage our producers diversify maybe from some of their traditional markets. We see new trends happening in macroeconomics and consumer behavior. Obviously, we've got growing middle classes in Southeast Asia. Africa is also a new opportunity for our exporters. So we're trying to give our farmers and our exporters the tools and resources they need to access and penetrate some of those new markets.
Okay, great. Well, hey, appreciate the time and info, Daniel. Thanks again for doing this.
All right. Thanks for having me.
For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Tyler Donaldson.
U.S. Farmers and Ranchers in Action CEO Kevin Burkham says that while agriculture has the ability to become greenhouse gas negative, there are considerations before that could happen.
Some of these practices that are being discussed, in the near term, they could potentially inhibit productivity and inhibit farmer profitability. And you know, farmers are business people, right? They're in this, they're running businesses. And so we as a system need to figure out what the right policies are, right, what the right financial mechanisms are so that they can adopt some of these practices, because they are doing things for the social good. So the report speaks to some areas where we may need to do some additional exploration and research, and those areas are certainly needed. But there is that potential.
Burkham applauds farmers and ranchers for what they already do.
Farmers and ranchers are amazing innovators. They are champions of change and always have been. And I think sometimes there's a conversation around the fact that farmers and ranchers, we need to change the way we do business. We need to transform the sector. Well, we're doing some amazing things in the ag sector, and this just speaks to the potential to do even more in the future.
USDA issued a final decision proposing to amend the uniform pricing formulas in all 11 federal milk marketing orders. Final decision puts forth a package of amendments to update formulas and makes limited changes based on public comments. USDA's Ag Marketing Service Deputy Administrator Dana Cole says the next steps are the most important.
This is where the dairy farmers get an opportunity to vote on each individual federal order as it has been amended through this final decision. As soon as the final decision is published in the Federal Register, we will begin the referendum process. Every eligible producer or the producer cooperative will receive a ballot for each order where they have milk pool during the representative month of January 2024. We will provide the ballot and information on how to vote to all producers and cooperatives. They must submit and return their ballot by December 31st. It must be postmarked by that date.
And a link to the webinars as well as more information is available on the AMS Milk Marketing Order website. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Let's catch up with Ag Week reporter Noah Fish. Noah, what do you have for us in the cover of Ag Week?
This week's Ag Week cover story is a feature on Ferndale Market in Cannon Falls, Minnesota, which is in the southeast portion of the state. Ferndale Market expects to market between 45 to 50,000 turkeys during its 17th annual Turkey Fest, which takes place the week before Thanksgiving. The turkey farm began in 1939 with Dale Peterson and his wife Fern, and is now managed by second and third generations of the family. In 2008, John Peterson and his wife began direct marketing the family's turkey under the Ferndale Market label, along with opening a retail store that's very popular today. In a calendar year, Ferndale Market, along with its handful of partner farms, raise around 150,000 turkeys. Most of that production is not sold as whole turkeys, but around this time of year, it's definitely the most popular product. The turkeys at Ferndale Market are raised free range. Peterson said that from early spring to the later part of fall, their turkeys in Cannon Falls have access to shelter for when the weather turns bad. Raising free-range birds without antibiotics doesn't stop Ferndale Market from producing good-sized turkeys, but it does take longer. November 22nd to the 27th is Turkey Fest at Ferndale Market, and the week-long event is a unique opportunity that allows customers to pick up a farm product straight from its source. To reserve a turkey and pick it up at Turkey Fest, customers should check the availability first by visiting ferndalemarket.com. For those who missed the reservation opportunity or live too far away, there are still chances to get a Ferndale Market turkey for Thanksgiving. The business distributes to about 80 stores with markets as far away as Fargo, North Dakota, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Des Moines, Iowa, and even Chicago.
Sounds interesting, Noah. Looking forward to reading about it next week's Ag Week. Let's check markets before we leave you this afternoon. December wheat in Minneapolis is 9 cents higher currently at 575.5. Chicago December wheat 8 cents higher. Kansas City's 8¾ cents higher. December corn 4¾ higher at 423¾. March 4½ higher, 435¼. January soybeans 13¼ higher at $10.75. March up 12¼, 10.11¼. January canola in Winnipeg's $21.60 a metric ton higher, $649.20 Canadian. December live cattle 10 cents higher. January feeders are up $3.87. December hogs down 85 cents. This is the Red River Farm Network.